Sit back and enjoy the stroke play of Meg Lanny.
This is excellent batting by Ash Gardner.
Jonathan strikes again. She's on a hat-trick. She comes at Molyneux. Catch is taken by Perry.
The Australian women's cricket team win their fifth T20 World Cup title in front of a magical crowd at the MCG.
Hello and welcome to the Scoop Podcast. We are the cricket podcast dedicated to the women's game. My name is Emily Collin.
And I'm Laura Jolly.
We've got a really exciting episode for you today. We've got the great Erin Burns joining the show ahead of her potential debut for the New South Wales Breakers. That's been a long time coming for Burnsy. But firstly, let's wrap up an exciting week of WNCL action. LJ, we were lucky enough to be up in Canberra for a really fun week watching some 50-over cricket. How did it all unfold?
We were absolutely lucky enough to be up there. We had the ACT Meteors, Queensland, the SA Scorpions and Tasmania all up there with us to start the season. The Tassie Tigers were the standout team for the week. They had two wins from two matches, which is a really strong start after a disappointing campaign last season. They defeated the Scorpions and Meteors. The Meteors upset Queensland early on, but every team walked away from the week with at least a win because the Scorpions got a win over the Meteors to close out the week.
Yeah, it was certainly great to be watching some longer form cricket after the WBBL season, and I'm sure the players were glad that the preseason finally wrapped up and they were back playing games. As you said, it was an exciting week with some evenly matched contests. We had three centurions for the week. They kept things pretty entertaining.
They sure did. Nicola Carey was the first up with her maiden ton against the Meteors. Then on Sunday, we had two tons in the one match. Katie Mack starting off with one for the Meteors before Bridget Patterson saw her team home with 100 of her own. I think in a week where a lot of the players struggled to adapt to the 50-over format, and also on a really difficult batting wicket at Phillip Oval where they played all four games on the one wicket, those four really showed their class to grind out some innings in really tough circumstances.
Yeah, it was certainly great to see them turn up and, yeah, get some wins on the board for their teams. And looking ahead, we've got an absolute cracker of a week to look forward to. So we've got Victoria hosting New South Wales in two matches at Junction Oval. LJ, you spoke to New South Wales coach Dom Thornley, who seemed pretty up and about with that prospect.
Absolutely. He reckons it's the biggest match in women's cricket in the world right now, and ooh, I think he's right. We've got the best players in the world. The Vics have got Elise Perry, Meg Lanning, Sophie Molyneux, Taylor Vollemick, Georgia Wareham, and Annabelle Sutherland all in their side. Never mind Molly Strano and Elise Villani. And then for New South Wales, you've got Elisa Healy, Rachel Haynes, Erin Burns, Ash Gardner and Sammy Jo Johnson, plus heaps of young guns. It's just absolute star-studded.
Yeah, it's going to be an absolute cracker. We are so excited. And unfortunately for those fans in Melbourne who are keen to maybe pop down to Junction Oval and have a watch, Cricket Victoria aren't letting the public in. However, you will be able to stream every ball live and free on cricket.com.au and the CA Live app. So, yeah, sink your teeth into that this week.
Yeah, hopefully people are not doing any work this week and just watching these live streams on Wednesday and Friday because it's going to be awesome. And there's been one more bit of really exciting news this week, hasn't there, Em?
Sure has. So it was announced this week that a two-part series titled The Record is launching this Friday. So The Record is following Australia's T20 World Cup journey. And, yeah, so that'll be available from this Friday on Amazon Prime. And if the trailer is anything to go by, it's going to be epic. More from us on that later this week. And we are joined today by New South Wales breaker, Sydney Sixer and Aussie World Cup winner, Erin Burns. Burnsy, thanks so much for taking the time to join us ahead of a very exciting week.
Yeah, no trouble. It's great to be talking to you guys.
You've got a potential Breakers debut coming up. It's been a long time coming. You're a New South Wales girl and you obviously were part of the contract list last season without getting a chance to play a game. Are you excited that it's finally happening?
Yeah, look, I'm actually really not counting my chickens. I don't know. I have these like ideas of that I'll be walking across the street or something and, you know, do my ankle in or something. No, it's just like the gods are against me at this point. But yeah, hopefully, you know, having undergone two pre-seasons under the strict guise of Sean, our S&C, who's somewhat a sadist at times, hopefully it can finally come to fruition that I can get my Breakers debut. I'm rooming with Sammy Joe Johnson down here in Melbourne, and we're both chomping at the bit to make our New South Wales Breakers debut, because obviously both of us being New South Wales, you know, coming through New South Wales underage systems and not kind of having that opportunity to play at that highest level, we're both super pumped.
Nice. Well, Burnsie, I'm sure you can make it one more day and get that pale blue cap. And obviously the Breakers are one of the most successful sporting teams in history. In your time that you've spent training with them over the last year or so, does that sort of success and that winning culture shine through in the way they go about things?
Yeah, I guess it's a pretty common thing that throughout pre-seasons we talk about, you know, creating team values and creating a culture that everyone wants to adhere to get the best out of not only yourself, but, you know, what you want to stand for as an association. But there's been a lot of talk about legacy, and as you mentioned, there's been an incredible legacy that's been left for us as the current generation of Breakers players from past players. As you mentioned, it's been an incredibly successful group of players throughout the years. So hopefully we can take that and run with it. Obviously a bit of a stiff opponent first up against the big, but I think everyone's just really looking forward to getting into it. It should be a great game, a great facility, and a super long preseason. So I think, as you said, everyone's so keen to get stuck in.
Yeah, as you said, super long preseason. It's also been a couple of months now since the WBBL ended. How much are you just itching to get back into it?
Yeah, it does seem like when we're in that hub life, it felt like it was never going to end. But now that everyone's kind of out of it, and you know, we're on the other side of 2020. We're all just so incredibly keen. You know, the latest few little hiccups with border closures and things just threw an extra little spanner in the works. But to be able to be down here in Melbourne and as I said, on the eve of the games coming up against Victoria, everyone's just so excited about it.
Yeah, so we've got two mouthwatering clashes against Victoria coming up. What's sort of been the discussion in the weeks leading into the playing the Vics, and what do you think the Breakers will have to do to knock the Vics over?
I don't think we're really focusing on too much else apart from what we do well and focusing on how we play our best cricket. As you said, it has been a little while that we've been together as one big unit and playing games. But, we've got some incredible talent, obviously, you know, from the tried and tested Elisa Healy and Rach Haynes through to a lot of young talent in you know, the likes of Stella Campbell and Hannah Darlington. I think across the board, most of our girls, or pretty much all of our girls, have had some really successful WBBL campaigns. So, obviously different format, but I think a lot of those girls have taken some confidence out of playing against girls of this caliber and with and against a lot of the girls in this Vic team, and really keen to put their skills on display in the next couple of days. But as I said, I think we don't need to, you know, overthink things too much. I think we're just going to stick to our processes and play it as it comes. As you said, they're a pretty formidable side, but I think if we can do what we do well, I think we'll give them a real good shake.
Nice. Anyone who's really stood out to you in the nets that's looking really good?
Bowling wise, yeah, Stella Campbell's got a bit of heat about her at the moment. Obviously, she's a tall lass, so she's got a little bit of that extra bounce that isn't really seen a lot in the women's game, just purely due to how tall she is. So she's been very, very good, and Sammy Joe's been hooping them around corners. So I think our bowling attack will be really on point in the next couple of days.
Awesome. Keen.
So much T20 cricket played with the WBBL. Why is the WNCL so important in the Australian domestic landscape?
Yeah, I guess T20 cricket's just been a bit of the evolution of the game. It's very palatable. It's short form. It's easier to get kids along to than they're not, you know, tugging at your ankles to try and go home because they're tired. So, I think for us, the 50-over format's been the one that has predominantly been played in the women's game, well, since the inception of the WNCL, I guess. And then T20 kind of, you know, started to get a bit of a roll on along with when, you know, Big Bash League and that started with the men. So, I think it's a really important thing to continue this legacy of, making a lot of importance around the fact that not that it's super long, obviously you're not playing test cricket, but that longer format of the game that people actually have an opportunity to, you know, implement tactics a little bit more. I think sometimes big bash cricket is a little bit of like a hit and giggle sometimes, but I think in the 50 over four, that's when you can really come into your own from a tactical side of things and really, you know, stamp your mark on the game with the long innings or with the five for under your belt. I think it's a fantastic opportunity for a lot of girls that really toil away to reap some rewards.
Yeah, definitely. What do you think, what do you prefer playing or not prefer? What do you think suits your game better, the 20 over format or 50 over?
I guess I've really enjoyed the big bash stuff in the last few years. I probably would say that that's something that I probably prefer more so, but I guess that comes out of just a lack of ability to play a lot of 50 over cricket as well in the last couple of years. I've really enjoyed playing the 50 over stuff, and as I said, I haven't managed to get that one on the board with the New South Wales team just yet. So so keen to pull on the Sky Blues tomorrow. But in terms of a for and against, I'd maybe say six to T20, 4 to 50. Nice. Just give a slight edge, you know?
Yeah, that's a pretty fair balance. And Bernsey, let's go back to the start for you. So you were a kid in Wollongong. Did you have a cricket centric upbringing? And what was Erin Burns like as a kid?
So I grew up with I got an older brother and three stepbrothers, and my dad was a pretty cricket crazy dad. So as a kid, we were always playing, you know, backyard cricket. Well, for us, it was driveway cricket and cricket, so slight variations of the Australian classic. And down the nets and stuff all the time. And I started playing, I guess, just with our local district team down there, Thrill Butchers, as a kid with my brother. And then it was more of a, I don't think Dad really wanted to put me into anything else. I think it was a one-stop wonder, you know, you either come along and watch or you come along and play. So I started playing with them, and then played a bit of PWSA cricket and kicked about in those kind of competitions and played some rep stuff for South Coast, and then got in the New South Wales set up a couple of times for the school stuff. And at the time, I didn't really realise that there was anything above that. I just thought that, you know, the highest that you could do for a female cricket was kind of school sport, really. And then I was playing in a PWSA, must have been a CHS competition, and Lisa Kiteley came over. And I'd heard of Lisa, obviously, you know, being a pretty amazing athlete at the time. She was playing for Australia and had done for quite a few years. And she just said, oh, look, do you want to come up and play or trial for a 15s, under 15s New South Wales team?
Nice.
And this is outside of cricket, outside of school. And I was like, oh, wow, there's something else here. So went and did that, and then was lucky enough to play the next couple of years all through 15s, 17s and 19s in that New South Wales set up, and, you know, hanging out with your mates and going down to Geelong and going to Perth and things for a couple of weeks was pretty cool, I think, as a kid at school. So did that for the most part of growing up, and obviously some pretty heated encounters with my brother down at the nets kind of kept me a little bit sharper on my feet. He'd always start off with leggies, and then he'd go to medium pace, and then he'd be throwing them down as fast as he possibly could and just hit me somewhere. So, a little bit of sibling rivalry definitely fueled the fire as a kid. And after that, got my first opportunity to play at that state level with Tassie, just because, as I said, New South Wales was, you know, it was essentially the Australian team at the time. So I had to look elsewhere, and, yeah, was fortunate that I got an opportunity across the Apple Isle.
Yeah, who offered you that role in Tassie, and how big a decision was it to make the move down there?
At the time, so Tassie wasn't a part of the competition at that time, and they were looking to put a team together for their first WNCL and WT. Well, actually, no, they weren't even in the WNCL to start with. They were in the WT20, so they were just playing the 2020 format of the what was usually a 3-day weekend. So you play two 1-days and a T20. So I got the opportunity just by So our coach, or the Tassie coach at the time, Jade Selby, was looking for just a couple of girls from the interstate to come down and, you know, just join the team. I think obviously Tassie has a far less pool of players to draw from, just purely from a population point of view. So obviously New South Wales had plenty and then some. So, myself, my friend Carly Ryan and Emma Thompson, or who's now Emma Flynn, who's still playing down in Tassie, all went down and played a season, just not really knowing what to expect. But yeah, we all just jumped at the opportunity. I think we're all pretty aware, as I said, that the New South Wales team was going to be pretty tough to crack, and you'd be sitting around for quite a few years, and but you probably got that opportunity. So yeah, at that time, no one was really doing that. It wasn't really an opportunity to play for other states. Usually, it was, you know, if you were going to a different state for university or for work or something, then you would play obviously in that state that you were now living in. But for the opportunity to fly in and fly out a little bit was something pretty fresh. So I thought, oh, this sounds pretty good. I was going to Wollongong and then would kind of scoot down for weekend matches and weekend camps and that kind of stuff. And obviously over the uni holidays, I'd stick around down in Tassie for a little bit longer. So yeah, it was awesome. I had zero hesitancy to do it, and to do it with a couple of your best mates was even better.
Nice. Was it tricky to balance your sort of life doing university and then also jetting in and out of Tassie?
Yeah, it was. They were really, really understanding with, you know, time that I needed off from uni and also and cricket. But at that time it was very different. It was very seasonal. So it's not like it is now, where, you know, you're contracted the whole year and you train throughout the whole year. It was, you know, you'd rock up in maybe September, do a fresh pre-season down in Launceston or something like that for a week or a couple of weeks, and then you'd get stuck in and, you know, the whole season would be done by December or January. So, the time commitment certainly wasn't the same as what it is now. So it was much easier to juggle, and a lot of the season kind of coincided with uni holidays. So, I kind of kicked about doing that for a while, and then, certainly saw the development of it as it started to become more professional, and, you know, more money was being put into it, more time was then expected of you. And I kind of got to a point where I, you know, graduated from uni, I was now working in Sydney, and it was becoming more and more apparent that if I wanted to continue down there, I would have to move. I'm a bit of a New South Wales gal. You know, I've played all around the park. So my friends and my family and my partner are all in Sydney. So I kind of thought that this is a bit of an opportunity, potentially try my luck with something a little bit closer. And got the offer to play for Sixers, which was great. Just allowed me to stay put a little bit more. And then ACT, so played a couple of seasons down there. And then, final couple of years, I've been able to stay put fully with a Breakers contract. So, yeah, it's been a little bit of a full circle journey. But, I wouldn't swap it for anything.
Nice. And how was your time with the Meteors? Did you feel like you sort of learned a bit there and sort of developed a bit more as a player than to get you ready for the Breakers and the Aussie team?
Yeah, it seemed like, I look back at it now, it seems super fleeting as well. The two seasons went by pretty quickly down there. And, I was teed up with James Allsop was our coach at the start, and then he got the gig in top dog down there. So then it was a very familiar face in David Drew, who'd actually been our assistant coach down in Tassie for the preceding probably four or five seasons while Julie Price was coach. So so he was our coach, and definitely helped in that transition, I think, as well. I was traveling back and forth from Canberra quite a bit. Became very familiar with the Hume Highway and where the speed cameras were and where the, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, definitely clocked up the Ks during those kind of couple of seasons. But, it was great. And then a great bunch of girls, and obviously a couple of girls that I did play a lot of cricket with when I was younger, in, you know, Erin Osborne, who's down there as well. So, I really liked my time there, but I think it became pretty apparent that I thought in my mind, I'm like, this will be easier because I'll be closer to home. And, yes, Canberra is obviously closer to home, but it still was like quite a bit of long drive and quite a bit of time out. So
yeah.
Then when I did get that opportunity to come back to New South Wales, it was a bit of a no-brainer for me.
Very nice. And all along that time, was it in the back of your mind that you did want to play for Australia one day? Is that something you were always working towards?
Yeah, like I think anyone that plays a sport that they love would love to represent their country. I think for me personally, particularly in the Tassie years, I had just so much fun. I was playing with some of my best mates and I made some amazing friendships with all the Tassie girls at the time. And we were fairly aware that we were the underdogs at the best of times. So I think during those kind of years, I don't think I thought too much about it. I think I was just going down and playing my cricket and just really enjoying playing. But I think certainly when I started like making those decisions to allow myself to be a bit more centralised with the Sixers stuff, and then obviously New South Wales and prior to that in the Canberra scene, I think I probably could have just kept on ticking along and doing my fly in fly out a little bit if that had worked with the rest of the organisations down at Cricket Tas. But I think that opportunity to centralise life and work and training and all of it just like allowed me to be able to put a bit more energy into cricket. And I think that's when I really kind of flipped the switch in thinking that, this is definitely something that I really want to have a good crack at. Whereas before I'd kind of, float in and out of it a little bit, having a bit of fun, just seeing kind of where it goes. So I'd probably say, definitely was always in the back of your head for sure. Or as a kid, I remember kind of having those little, daydreams about representing your country. And, I think what transpired, nearly 12 months ago in the World Cup was, a pretty, pretty dreamlike state, to be perfectly fair. I think that was a year ago. It's pretty crazy. But, it's been amazing and certainly something that I'll treasure.
Yeah, so when you got that call from Australian selector Sean Flegler that you were heading over to the West Indies, did that come as a surprise to you, or was it on your radar a little bit, or just out of nowhere?
No, it wasn't on my radar at all. I was settling in for a solid period of work, to be perfectly so I think the first thing that kind of, got my attention that could potentially be a thing was we went to to the UK in that June and July for a series, Aussie A series against England and England A, whilst the Aussie girls were over there playing their Ashes. And it was myself and then a large gap to the next group of girls. So actually Sammy Joe was over in that tour too, and there were few of us that could actually were old enough to drive the vehicles, and I was obviously one of them. And Sammy jokes that it was Burnsy's magic school bus, which it probably was in a way. So I was over there just thinking. I was talking to Leah Poulton, who was the coach over there. And I was just like a little bit perplexed because, here I was at 31 with probably an average age of 18. It's like an amazing experience, but kind of thinking, this is interesting. Like, why would I be in development? And obviously, chatting to Leah, and she kind of gave me a couple of words saying, there is potential for something higher if you want it. I guess that little bit of a fire. And when I got the call in August, it was like it's definitely a surprise. I didn't think that it would happen that quickly. And obviously unfortunate for Sophie that she couldn't get up because of her shoulder injury. But for me personally, it was an amazing experience, and just tried to take it all in really when I was over there.
And probably a bit of a shock even debut with Megan that back and the sudden tap on the shoulder.
I think it's it was probably quite fitting really the way that it all happened. So Meg going down the day of, really. She's doing all sorts of weird and wonderful stretches that looked like she was about 75. I'm like, she's Meg Lanning, she'll get up. And then, Matthew Mott coming over and tapping me on the shoulder and being like, right, you're on. I'm like, okay, cool, cool, it's all cool. Fun.
Hey, Sutton, and your path to that level of cricket hasn't been exactly linear. Do you think what you've been through going to Tassie and the ACT has helped shape you as a person and give you a lot of perspective?
I think it's definitely allowed me to experience different setups and different teams and the way that different teams kind of go about it. I think down in Tassie, particularly early days, it was quite relaxed and quite like, I guess, just a focus on, you know, doing what you know well and you know, the rest will kind of take care of itself. And I guess as I've kind of continued along, I think, yeah, the professionalism and things has certainly increased, as I said, with the amount of money and time that is being funneled into women's cricket from Cricket Australia to all the different states and things. But, yeah, look, I think it's I've never really been someone who, like, you know, you think where you hear that old story, that old question of, you know, where are you going to be in 5 years' time? And I've never been able to tell you. Like, I've never thought more than 2 weeks ahead of myself. So, yeah, I think I've always been someone who has tended to just take it as it comes a little bit and, you know, big believer in if you're doing the right things and chipping away that, you know, things will come eventually. So, I think that's a bit of a Tassie kind of, I've always loved a bit of an underdog story too. You know, obviously I am from New South Wales, but I would like to say that a big part of my cricket heart resides down in Tassie. So, I do always love a bit of that underdog story, and I'd like to think that when we were down there, our first indoor session down at the NTCA in Launceston, comparing that to the facilities and stuff that they have over here at Junction Oval or at New South Wales, I'm like, gee whiz, that was a bit of a far cry from that. So, it's been a pretty awesome journey, but loved every moment.
Yeah, I bet, like, thinking back to the indoor nets in Tassie, you probably didn't think that one day you'd be sort of on the ground when there's 86,000 people in the MCG for the T20 World Cup final.
No, you're definitely right. if someone had kind of said that would be the, something that would come into fruition in the, well, that was a while ago, that'd be about 10 years ago, but I still wouldn't have believed them. I don't think I would have believed that there'd be that many people to watch a women's cricket game full stop, let alone me being a part of it.
So. Yeah. What are your reflections from that tournament in general?
Yeah, look, I think in the moment, I think there was obviously a lot of media hype and a lot of buzz around it. But I think we were all fairly, I wouldn't say removed, but I don't think anyone really indulged in it a lot. The talk was always like quite about the group rather than all the external factors. So it tended to be like quite a little bubble, so to speak, which is quite funny talking about bubbles these days. But we obviously knew that there was a big buzz about it. We knew that there was a lot of hype around it, but we kind of parked that and just took it one day, one game at a time. And, you know, there were some heart flutters early, particularly against, you know, obviously that opening game against India not going the way we wanted, and then having a bit of a heart in mouth moment against Sri Lanka following it up in Perth. But I think those experiences just hardened the team, I think, a little bit and kind of allowed us to be like, right, okay, if we can kind of get through this, we can get a bit of a roll on, and then, you know, we know what we need to do. So, and then obviously to finish with, you know, a near sellout crowd, it was just honestly, like, and people say this, and I know that, you know, you kind of expected to say this, but it was just the most surreal experience of my life to walk into the MCG. And we've obviously played at the MCG a bunch of times, and, you know, the most notable thing there is the echo. Usually you can kind of be like, hey, and then it's hey, all around because there's no one there. And and then to walk in and to have, well, obviously not only, you know, the amazing sexy back outfits of Katy Perry's backup dancers running around the place, but to see, you know, people sitting in the top row of the top tier at the MCG before the games even started, I was just like, wow, this is going to be something special.
Got the record coming out this week, the Amazon documentary. Have you had a chance to watch that yet and look back over everything that happened a year ago?
I haven't yet. I haven't had the chance. I've kind of had little bits and pieces of moments kind of here and there, but I want to make sure that I have the time to sit down and fully take it in. As I said, I've definitely got some amazing fond memories, and I'm sure that there'll be some moments that'll be, brought back to life from a couple of the things that'll come about in the documentary. But I think it'll be fantastic. I think it's going to be a pretty amazing. From all accounts, anyway, it's been a pretty amazing product that they put together. So, yeah, looking forward to seeing the whole thing in full when I can, steel myself and in a nice dimly lit room and really soak into exactly, yeah.
Yeah. And, Bernsie, one last question just for the fans. Do you ever sort of sit back and think how wild it was that somehow you ended up on stage with Katy Perry just owning that stage?
Absolutely. That was like, just the most, as I said, I've said it a bunch of times already, just the most surreal experience to be up there dancing on her kind of stage and to have, the best part of 50,000 people just riding every moment with you. I did have one regret, though, and it did cross my mind that I should have taken that moment to crowd surf. I was looking down
definitely
at the crowd, like whilst I was, doing a few little high fives on the side of the stage, and I think the average age is about 15, so I wasn't entirely sure of their upper body strength. I may have killed someone, but that was probably my only regret being up there. But it was just unbelievable, and I just think you just felt like a proper rock star in that moment. I think it was the perfect way to cap off just such an incredible tournament and an incredible day.
Absolutely. Bernsie, thank you so much for joining us on today's episode of the Scoop Podcast, and all the best for your Breakers debut this week. Should be a cracking week.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks so much, guys. Obviously, you're barracking for the Sky Blues tomorrow, so I'll take that as a as a bit of a message of support too.
Absolutely.
Sit back and enjoy the stroke play of Meg Lanny.
This is excellent batting by Ash Gardner.
Jonathan strikes again. She's on a hat-trick. She comes at Molyneux. Catch is taken by Perry.
The Australian women's cricket team win their fifth T20 World Cup title in front of a magical crowd at the MCG.